Welcome to the Felt Recall Podcast. This is a quick preface to this week's program. There was an audio snafu that was not recognized until we were done recording, and Stump was long gone. So the audio will sound really familiar to you if you've ever had a phone call with a friend, because that's what it sounds like for some reason, as if Stump and I had a conversation over the phone and recorded it to share with you. I don't know why that is, but it is what it is. Either way, it's a really good conversation. It's a lot of fun. It's worth listening to. And here it is.
I think I'll be all right. I can't decide.
Take a spot of
juice. You know how, like, you're going to sneeze eventually in there, yep. But it's not right now. So you're planning the execution of it.
But it's going to come out of nowhere and just, yeah.
I guess I just have to put up with it. All right, here we go. If I sneeze, I sneeze.
Yeah.
All right. Welcome to the Felt Recall Podcast. This is episode 149. 149th episode. I also think, is it the fourth?
Yeah.
Stump Show?
The fourth Stump Show.
The fourth Stump Show. Welcome back, sir.
When this rate needs a boost, you know who to call.
We bring you in. It's what you're good for. I was going to, here we go. I was looking to applaud you.
Thank you.
All right. As you heard me mention, I'm trying to stifle a sneeze here. I feel bad about it. Okay. Everything good in your headphones? I didn't ask before we started.
Yeah.
You sound good to you? You sound good to me. I just want to make sure. Okay. Hulon is out again. He's just much more important than we are these days.
Bomb.
It's just
what
the way it goes.
How come here? Can't even get graced with his presence.
Yep. I believe he is taking some bereavement time. His favorite show ever has ended. 28 years, Conan O'Brien calls it a night on his daily late night talk shows. CBS wrapping it up. Get to that in a second. I want to know what your favorite Conan moment was. I remember mine, but it wasn't necessarily Conan's, just from the show. Normally at the top of each week, Stump, we do charity of choice. We tell you about a great charity you can run out and support right now if you'd like to do it. But tonight we're going to turn that on its head. I'm going to tell you a charity that kind of has me scratching my chin. The Make-A-Wish Foundation making headlines this week. Did you see this? If you're not a this is the craziest thing I've ever seen. If you don't know what Make-A-Wish Foundation is, here's a foundation dedicated to making final wishes of terminally ill children come true. You know, they want to meet Tom Brady, or they want to go to Disney World, or they want to be on the Felt Recall podcast. They make those things happen. Okay? I feel really bad for that kid, by the way. I got 6 weeks. Put me on that show, and then nobody ever hears it. All right. So anyway, that's what they do. And they have now said that if your terminally ill child and your wish is to ride on an airplane or be in a public space, they will not grant your wish unless you get the COVID vaccine. The kicker being, by the way, that the vaccines, there's not a vaccine out there for COVID that has been approved for any children under the age of 12. Despite the announcement, according to Fox Business, none of the available COVID-19 vaccines are currently approved for children under the age of 12. The Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine is currently approved for use in individuals 12 and older, while the Moderna and Johnson & Johnson vaccines are approved for individuals 18 and older. So you're just kind of SOL if you're a six-year-old riddled with cancer and you want to go to Disney World. Make-A-Wish was going to work on that for you. Well, they're not going to do it anymore. Now, here's what makes me hate Make-A-Wish. Here's what makes me hate them. I hate doublespeak. I hate doublespeak. And this is from a guy, by the way, who can't – if I check out at Publix and they say you want to add some cash – for Make-A-Wish or St. Jude's or whatever it is about kids, I can't say no. I never, ever say no. If it's a charity for kids, it gets my money, okay? This is their statement where they say, So the backlash, by the way, was so severe that the president and CEO, Richard Davis, announced that the foundation he'll resume granting wishes involving large gatherings and air travel within the U.S. and federal territories for fully vaccinated children and their families. And then there's all this backlash. And then they come out and they basically say, look, that's not what we meant. We understand, these are their words, quote, we understand that there are many families whose children aren't eligible for the vaccine yet. And we also know that there are families who aren't choosing to get the vaccine. We respect everyone's freedom of choice. We will continue to grant wishes for all eligible children, including children who have not been vaccinated. But that's not true. That's not true. It depends on the wish. It depends on the wish. So if your wish, again, is to go to a crowded place or get on an airplane, they're not going to let it happen. Because according to the president and CEO, Mr. Davis, critically ill children and their families will need to be 2 weeks past completion of either a one-dose or two-dose vaccine. While Make-A-Wish will not require proof of vaccination, listen to this carefully, because this is the veil they're using. We're not going to require proof of vaccination, but the parents will be required to sign a form confirming that they and their children are compliant with the policy.
So
like the policy of if you're not vaccinated, you can't go to certain places. So anyway, here's what I don't understand. If your kid is terminally ill right now, because what do we know about COVID? We know COVID doesn't kill, right? It's the pre-existing conditions. It's the, I think we're up to, you need about 3.5 other things going wrong with you, and then you get COVID and you die. That's about the average, right?
Right.
That's not a joke. That's for real. It was 2.6 a while back. It's now raised. But we do know, so we know that a terminally ill child, they're the last person in the world that wants COVID. Because their body's already breaking down and they have something going on and they want to avoid it. Fine. That responsibility should be on the parents. Because the other part of it is the COVID vaccine, it hasn't seen long-term trials yet. We don't know exactly what the long-term effects are. They're now issuing a warning that heart inflammation may happen in children, is it 12 to 18, right?
Yep.
It's young kids. So we know that the kids are seeing kind of a disproportionately negative effect on them from the COVID vaccine. We saw the lady last week, I think we talked about this, her 14-year-old nephew died. So her son got it, and then they encouraged the nephew to get it, and the vaccine killed the 14-year-old nephew. Now she's all torn up about it because she feels somewhat responsible. Not her fault, by the way. Not her fault. So Make-A-Wish is now taking the stand that if your kid hasn't been fully vaccinated, their entire wish might not come true. We won't grant certain aspects, but then out of the other side of their mouth. But we're not discriminating. We're gonna help everybody. So that's kind of a bummer. That makes me not want to support Make-A-Wish. I was thinking the other day, I don't know if you saw the Tucker Carlson. Did you see Tucker Carlson, the reporter, tried to make a stink about the fact that he texted Tucker Carlson about if he had been vaccinated or not?
I didn't see that, no.
He texted Tucker Carlson and said, you know, we're asking if you've been fully vaccinated. And Tucker Carlson replied and said, when was the last time you had sex with your wife and in what position? And the guy wanted that to be a big story. That was so insulting. But I thought that made such a great point. Like, why is my personal medical history any of your business? Imagine, again, trying to get a job and they want to know what your medical history is for whatever other medical procedures you've had. Right?
Right.
Remember when Hobby Lobby was in trouble because they were saying they couldn't be mandated to provide healthcare that would cover abortions and transgender reassignment surgery and all that kind of stuff. And everybody wanted Hobby Lobby shut down because they're infringing on a woman's right to choose. Can you imagine if the story would have been Hobby Lobby was asking prospective employees if they'd ever had abortion?
Right. Sure. Can't do that.
Yeah, or if they were homosexual in their preference, right? You can't do that kind of stuff.
And then you're ballistic because it is, in fact, Hobby Lobby.
Why is COVID so different? Why is everybody okay with, I need to know your take on COVID. Because we live in an upside-down world.
I'm a guy who, I'm one of the ones who had COVID that didn't know he had COVID. And I may or may not have gone to the happiest place on earth.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, passed the temperature checks. Right through.
Right. That's kind of what you want, though, because then you get the antibodies.
Yeah. I mean, I saw it from both sides. It, my mom had a very negative impact. We actually missed Christmas with her, but once again, underlying something we didn't know was there.
Yep.
Put her on her butt. She went to the hospital. She missed Christmas, which was very unfortunate, but you know,
that's too bad.
I got my shot, just my wife's in health care.
Yeah.
It was coming down the pike anyway. But funny story, when I was at Disney World, I was walking around there. I've got this big bushy beard. I mean, overweight, you name it. That's me. If you need a picture of me, I'll break your screen. But
I've got one we're going to talk about.
I looked at April. I said, honey, I've been so stern about this. You ain't putting that crap in my body, yada, yada, yada. I didn't say crap. I looked at her 20 minutes into Disney World and said, if somebody walked up and said, here's the first COVID vaccine ever. You take that mask off. You let me stick this in your arm.
Right.
I probably would have pulled down my pants. I'd just shoot it in the butt. Just give it to me right there.
Let's just do this.
Yeah.
And was it more if you wanted away from the mask?
Yes, because, I mean, 78 degrees in Florida, breathing in all this fumes off this stank-ass breath and beard. It's like, get me out of this thing, you know? Not to mention, I've got my mother who's got some issues. She had her mask on. We ended up, sadly, giving it to her because I'm not going to say how we contracted it. We know how we contracted it due to negligence. But it was one of those things where I was kind of like, you know, but no, I've seen how it affects people. It affects another member of April's family. But, you know, me and April made it through the fine. The only residual long-lasting effect that we've had from it is April cannot get her sense of smell back. She smells vaguely, but she smells trash and old cigarettes.
Oh, no kidding.
And like old, because her mom is a smoker. But she said it smells like an old bar room full of just wet cigarettes in a Mountain Dew bottle. And I was like,
everywhere she goes, or?
Everywhere she goes. I was like, honey, that can't be a real thing. Apparently, it is a real thing. And there are groups. People smell trash. People smell that. Some people smell good things, but she has got cigarettes stuck in her nose.
I have to say, you just missed a real opportunity, because what I thought you were going to say is that the prolonged effects that you guys were seeing was the fact that April can't figure out how to put fuel in her vehicle.
Yeah.
That's where you're going to go with it.
I think that was a pre-COVID condition. That's one of her underlying conditions.
That stuck around no matter what. It reminds me of, have you ever heard of foreign accent syndrome?
Is that where people talk like people with foreign accents? Like if you go to a gas station and you talk like you're Indian?
Yeah, sort of. It's more like you have head trauma and the resulting lingering effect is that you begin speaking with a foreign accent. And it's a real thing. It's incredibly, incredibly rare, but it is a real thing.
Because my old man, he would just used to talk to people. And like, we went to a Mexican restaurant. He spoke very broken English, like that was going to help them understand more. And I was like, what is
that guy, huh?
Yeah,
I know that guy. Yeah. That's funny. That's funny.
Working in a field that's predominantly Hispanic, I have broken myself of that very quickly. Hilarious to see on a daily basis.
Yeah, well, you know what's funny is that that does speak to our culture at large, right? Because I remember I had a friend in high school, I'll leave him nameless, because now he has a really good job, and, you know, the way the world is now. But he was Mexican, right? He married a Colombian woman. They dated when we were in high school. They were such good people. They still are, I'm sure. Salt to the earth kind of guy. But he had this famous story in high school where I let him skip the line to stand next to me at the food cart outside of school. See, our school, you could go to the actual cafeteria and eat, right? You could pay to eat up there at the cafeteria, or they had a food cart about every day, maybe on certain days. I don't really remember, maybe Wednesday through Friday, because I don't think it was there every day. And that guy served hot dogs, hamburgers, slice of pizza, whatever it was, you know. But he was cheap, is what I remember. He was like, if you got a dollar and to eat something, that's where you went, right? So anyway, I let my friend skip the line with me one day, and the vendor running the cart got furious about it, like real mad, and he told him he had to go back to the line. And my friend said, why? And he said, you can't skip. And he said, my friend, I don't remember the exact, but essentially my friend was like, I don't hear you getting at any of these white people. Why are you getting at me? And the guy was like, don't do that. And my friend goes, you're being racist. You're only acting like I skipped the line because I'm Mexican. That's a negative stereotype that you think, you know, I skipped the line. like Mexicans do. And we all started laughing, you know, like we were giving the guy a hard time. Yeah, it's because he's Mexican, you know. And so he ended up in the principal's office over it because it was, you know, dumb rules with the dumb people enforcing the rules. And anyway, that always stuck with me that he would play that joke and we would laugh about that joke. In fact, I'll add one. I had a friend named Musa who was Lebanese, and his family came here during the war in like 91-ish or whenever. When we were all kids, they came to America to escape, I believe. I believe Lebanon had a civil war in the 80s, is what I'm going to say. And that's when they came. And we got charged with making a video once in this AV class I was in, right? And we twisted the plot a little bit, made him a hijacker. Because the plot was there was a watch salesman on the plane, and he had to sell a watch to the person next to him. That's what we were supposed to film. But what we did was Musa ended up with all these watches on his arm, and it was a bomb, right? He's going to blow the plane up. But Musa did it, and he thought it was funny, and we all thought it was funny because you're 15, and that kind of stuff makes you laugh, and it still makes me laugh to think about it. Because I remember Musa playing the part to full effect, and it was brilliant and funny, and he was a funny guy. And we got in trouble. And it reminds me of where we are today, too, where all these old white people were telling the minority kids how racist they were for the things they were doing that they found funny. And it's kind of the world we live in now, where it's a bunch of old liberal white people telling all the minorities how oppressed they are and how these things shouldn't be funny because, you know, they're playing on racial stereotypes or whatever it is, right? And that's really where we are. So I'm sure what your dad was doing was probably actually really funny. And I'm almost positive that the people he was playing the joke to thought it would be funny as well, and they would play along in return.
It's one of those things I don't think he realized what he was doing. It was just one of those things where it was like, hey, maybe they will understand me a little bit more if I try to put this accent on this and slow it down.
Very cliche out of the slapstick comedy.
Very much.
Daddy doesn't understand you. He speaks Spanish. And I guess, oh, I'm sorry. I would like the number 11, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I like that. My chips and salsa, my friend. More of those.
You are here, by the way, not just to sit in, but because you went to Talladega, Alabama, and you drove the track as part of the Richard Petty driving experience. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. We're going to get to that in a few minutes. I should have said that at the top. But we got a couple of things I want to talk about before we get there. That having been one of them was the Make-A-Wish. Speaking of jokes and things that I think I would get you canceled that they did back then, Conan O'Brien called it quits this week. Like I said at the top, 28 years. Isn't that crazy? I'm 40 years old. That means he started at NBC when I was 12.
Is that when he took over for Leno the first time?
Letterman. Yeah, he took over for Letterman as Letterman left to go to NBC or to CBS. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, he took the late night spot from Letterman. In fact, they shared today or yesterday. It's very so good. See, here's another thing you could never get away with. You could never get away with this. But he did his very first opener. He wakes up and he's all happy-go-lucky. He's walking to heaven. Do you remember this by any chance? He's walking down the street and everybody's saying, good luck, best of luck, you better be good. And it progressively gets to where everybody's telling him, you better be as good as Letterman. You better be as good as Letterman. And all of his answers are bright and cheery. And he's like, you betcha, I'll do my best. I'm going to give it my all. I will do it. You know, he's very chippery and very happy, you know, very chipper. And then he gets to the studio and he goes up and he goes into his room and he closes the door and he hangs a noose. And he gets up in a chair and he's putting the noose around his neck because the pressure's too much for him to take. And somebody knocks on the door and they go, Mr. O'Brien, you're on. And he goes, like right now, or do I have a minute? And the guy goes, right now, sir. And he goes, oh, well. And he takes the noose off and he gets down to go out and do his job. And I just thought that was so funny. Like, it's kind of a dark humor situation, but you couldn't do it these days. You know, the suicide prevention advocates would come after you and go, you can't joke about that. People do that. I get it. I get that people do that. We've all known probably multiple people at this point. I certainly do that did that. And it's tragic and I get it. But who are you if you don't find at least some humor in things in life? Like, can't you compartmentalize and say that was this side? And yes, that's tragic because it was real. But actually, here's a funny joke that happens to use an element of that tragedy to it, you know, or maybe I'm just totally callous and heartless. I don't know.
But. Yeah, you got to be able to poke fun at things. That's, I'm with you there. I mean, I know what you mean. Somebody would attack it today. The, you know,
they'd be after it.
1-800 or 1-911-800-456-SUICIDE would be like, that's not good, Mr.
Right, O'Reilly. Right. Cancel him.
No.
Then they boycott anybody doing advertising with you, and those people would give in, and it's just no fun anymore. No. You know, when I got out of radio, man, so many years ago, whatever it was, right? But when I stopped doing Top 40 radio, I didn't want to do it to a certain degree anyway, because I didn't like that the kind of business side of it all made me mad at how fake everything is, how much they lie to people, you know? And so I went it out anyway. It wouldn't have bothered me. But I remember the tenor of everyone around me being, in fact, when I got let go from a job, they said, we're cutting back the air talent by 30% across the board, across the whole company, and you're part of that chop. And I said, okay. And my boss called me. Very apologetic, really nice guy. And he said to me, go do what you want to do, because I'm going to tell you something right now. Very soon, radio won't be fun anymore for guys like you, because you're not allowed to do a show. You're not allowed to talk. The jokes are going to be gone. You're going to be limited to 7 to 8 seconds at a time that you crack the mic. You're not going to want to do this much longer anyway, but find a new thing. Something you're really going to enjoy to do. There's all these new things. And podcasting was kind of becoming a thing. So we were experimenting with podcasting and things like that. But he was real motivating in the sense of, this isn't going to be funny. I feel that way about anybody that would think about going into comedy these days. I would bet my bottom dollar that there's conversations being had. In fact, I think there are documentaries about it right now, about how you can't go into comedy these days. Everybody wants to cancel you.
That is my dream job. Bucket list thing.
Stand-up comedy? Really?
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever written anything?
Dabbled.
Yeah?
Tried out at work now, but yeah.
You should do an open mic night.
Yeah, no. I'm not going to go up there and do that.
Why? You can get a stage name. Make a name up. Pop up on stage and give it 5 minutes of your best.
My funny is your funny, and my funny is a lot of my friends' funny. I don't know how to translate to the public.
It doesn't matter. I'll go. I'll laugh. Yeah. I'm serious.
I've considered it.
Buddy, you'll never get more time. You'll never get more time. You got to go do it. I'm serious about that.
I mean, look at me. The Joker acts itself. We can squeeze 5 minutes out of just this.
I'd love it. You know, I have a file in my Gmail that are all stand-up comedy bits that I think would be funny, that I would love to write out and go to an open mic night and try. Maybe we could challenge each other to do it together.
Yeah,
and just go see if it flies.
What's the worst that's going to happen? I mean, Chappelle's been booed off stage before.
Everybody's been booed, and you just got to take that as part of it. And in fact, I can tell you the worst that would happen, because I've seen it happen in person. Because I have a friend named Chris who once said to himself, I'm going to be a stand-up comedian. I have this act I've written. And so he came to me, and I was living in Birmingham, Alabama, and he knows this is true. And he said, I have a stand-up act, and I need somewhere to do it. I'm going to do this stand-up routine. So I had a friend that owned a bar, and I said, let me talk to BG, and I bet we could get you on stage at BG's, and we'll advertise an open up mic night for you, and you get up and do jokes before the band plays, because he had a band that played there every week for open mic. I don't even think it was open mic night. I think they just played every Thursday or whatever it was. And this was, like I said, the boss that called me, right, and said, go find something else. This is that same time period. They let me go. I had to sign an agreement to not work in radio within 100 miles for 6 months. And if I would do that, they would pay out the two-year contract. So I was 17 months into a 24-month contract. They said, we'll pay the remainder, but you can't work in broadcasting. I've been working since I was 15. I was 27 at the time. And I said, I'm going to take 6 months to do whatever I feel like doing. So I had this cash gig at Bee Gees, right? And so I would go in there and work. Whatever. Here's the whole point. So Chris gets up to do his jokes, and it's flat. It's a little flat, okay? Chris was not destined to be a stand-up comedian. He would agree with me on that. It goes a little flat. Somebody heckles Chris, and Chris decides the best course of action is to turn it on the audience. And he just starts making fun of everybody in the room. Like, he's pointing at people and talking about them and asking what business they have booing him. It was spectacular, but it was really awkward. Like if you were an Andy Kaufman fan, kind of some Norm MacDonald-esque, but more Andy Kaufman style, let me make everybody in the room feel awkward and then see if they'll laugh about how awkward they feel. That's what Chris did really well that night. But that was not Chris's intent. The original intent had failed, and he pivoted to that. And boy, howdy, it was a really, really good time. So anyway, I have seen it go south that way. That could be a disaster.
Yeah.
But probably not much else.
That's where I thrive. If I could kick at people,
yeah,
get the best out of
them. I would imagine if you went to the open mic night locally, and he said, I got 6 minutes of material. I practiced it over and over. I'm just going to see if I can make these people laugh. That the first chuckle would fuel your adrenaline enough that the next 5.5 minutes would fly.
Probably so.
And even then, if you did 6 minutes to tepid applause, you'd be so happy you even tried.
But hell, I get so nervous. Like, I've gotten so nervous on here, I don't even listen back to these things when they go on. But these are the weeks that I don't listen.
Oh,
the
really?
First time I was on here was a train wreck.
No.
And then
maybe
it's slowly gotten better. The Tiger King one was okay.
Tiger King was awesome.
That bottle of wine.
Yeah, it's a good time.
I'd give it a whirl.
Yeah.
I would consider giving it a whirl. I'll just have to figure out what I was going to say for 6 minutes.
Let's do it. I've got a great one I want to flesh out and run by you about how you can tell the difference between men and women in the way they treat a stray dog and how women see an opportunity to capture something, change it into what they think it should be, tell it when and where it should pee and poop and eat. Men see the stray dog and get jealous. They see the life they wish they could live. And I think there's something to that.
That could work.
So there's my stand up, there's something there to it thing. We could flesh those ideas out together, I'm saying. Could each help each other write our 6 minutes, and then we go stand on an open mic back-to-back one night and give it a shot.
Let's make it happen.
That would be really fun.
Felt really cool night, open mic night.
So speaking of Netflix documentaries, since you brought up Tiger King, did you watch Making a Murderer?
I didn't watch. I have not. I listened to the podcast last week, and that's one of mine that's on deck, but I'm trying to knock out another show and get it out of the way.
I got you.
Making a Murderer is happening.
All right. When you're done, then I'd like to, I was going to say, what did you think about the new evidence? But, all right. Okay. And you wouldn't have an answer to if you think he's guilty or not. Yeah, I haven't seen the documentary. Okay. Back to Conan. Favorite Conan bit was my question for you.
Well, I have a new favorite as of this week, but my all-time favorite bit is when Conan takes his intern out driving so she can get her license. And
yes,
Ice Cube and Kevin Hart, they pick them up, and it turns out to be pretty funny.
We have a clip. Let's listen.
Good? We looking for marijuana.
What did he say, Pedro and what?
12. 12 and Pedro.
Pedro and 12?
I think he was talking about San Pedro and 12.
Well, is it two different places?
You're not even driving.
Why are you assuming that Cube knows more about this neighborhood than I do? Why aren't you asking me about this neighborhood?
You're absolutely right about that, Conan.
That's racist.
Conan,
you were racist towards me.
Is it Pedro or Pedro?
I'm not sure. I've never been down here, and I'm terrified. Yeah, we're going to buy weed. Have you done crack?
That's a good one. That one's strong. This isn't a Conan. It's a Conan bit, per se, but it's not a Conan idea. My answer would be Triumph the Insult Comic Dog. He was always a classic, and he would go out and, just like his name implies, insult people. The creator, Robert Smeagol, I think his name is, or Smeagol, I'm not sure how you say it.
What a name.
He now has a show on Hulu called Let's Be Real, and it's hilarious. It's puppets, a bit crude. Can't take a little crude humor, don't watch it. But they did a great bit. The opening bit on that's really good. And then there's one where Trump shows up on Antique Roadshow and he's stolen a bunch of stuff out of the White House and he's trying to sell it. One of which is the Bill of Rights, and he's red pinned it, you know. He's telling how he made it better. He's trying to get $400 million for it. It's pretty good stuff. Anyway, that guy came up with Triumph the Insult Comic Dog, and he was that was just a really, really good bit. Here's Triumph at the Star Wars premiere, Attack of the Clones.
Yes, it's premiere night here for Attack of the Clones, but outside the Ziegfeld Theater is the real show, Return of the Dorks. Thousands of 35-year-old men waiting days, even months, for just a taste of George Lucas's table scraps. Lonely men who have never had sex, not even with a Catholic priest.
I'm here with, all right, you're dressed as a huge nerd, yes?
Yes.
No, what, seriously, you're supposed to be
supposed to be a Jedi.
You're a Jedi Knight, yes. And what are the principles of a Jedi Knight?
To always defend truth and justice throughout the galaxy.
And to eat a lot of peanut M&Ms. Throughout the galaxy. You know what's good about this costume, folks? Take a look. He has the ability, he can crap his pants and no one will notice. Everyone is engaging in rousing games of Star Wars Stratego. This is Risk. Very exciting. This game is normally played indoors by 12-year-olds. Very exciting. Darth Vader himself is here. All the other nerds tremble in his presence.
What are you supposed to be? Would be my chest box that helps me to breathe.
So this is to help you breathe, yes?
Yes.
And which of these which of these buttons calls your parents to pick you up? What are you supposed to do?
Just good stuff. So Conan will be missed. I didn't understand how deep the rift was in that community over what Jay Leno did to Conan. Like, it was news to me that even Jimmy Kimmel took swipes at Leno about it on his show. Like, yeah. Everybody was mad at Leno. Jimmy Kimmel apparently to Leno's face, like, had Leno on the show and told him to his face how dirty.
Yeah, there's that clip out there.
You're known for pranks. What's the best prank you ever pulled?
I think the best prank I ever pulled was I told a guy that 5 years from now I'm going to give you my show. And then when the 5 years came, I gave it to him, and then I took it back almost instantly. Wow. It was hilarious.
I never knew that Conan hosted the Tonight Show. That's a little bit out of my.
Oh, really? Weren't paying attention at the time. It was only 6 months. But, you know, it'd been easy to miss.
What years were those, do you think?
Well, 10 years ago, probably, yeah.
Before I was interested in late night TV.
Right.
We went to they have a ride at Universal Studios that is the Jimmy Fallon Race Through New York.
Oh, really?
When you go in, they've taken this old soundstage and made it look like 30 Rock.
Okay.
And it has all the hosts of the Tonight Show on there. Well, Conan O'Brien has his own deal with one of his suits and his shoes and everything else. I was like, well, I never knew this. And it took me until, it was until last December when I was like, and I actually got to walk through there and read. And I'm a nerd for stuff like that. I said, I never knew that. And I was telling April, I was like, that's ironic. And April said, that's the redheaded guy. I was like, you're on point, honey.
You got it, babe. Ride. You got it. Yeah, he was the host, it says on Wikipedia, from June 1st, 2009 to January 22nd, 2010. So not long at all. And are you familiar? I guess now you know the backstory of that.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy that basically Leno came back and said, nah, James.
Because they took it to California, and then Fallon brought it back to New York.
Yeah.
I didn't know that either.
One other thing that I thought was great about Conan was he met his wife during a bit for the show.
Really?
Yeah, and I didn't know that until I watched his closing monologue where he thanked everybody. By the way, if you do go watch one thing out of all this, I say watch the Nick Offerman bit. Did you see Offerman say goodbye? He came on, and he basically played Ron Swanson, if you're familiar with Parks and Rec.
I watch anything that has – I've never seen Parks and Rec all the way through, but I'm a very big Ron Swanson
guy. Oh, really? Okay. So yeah, Offerman comes out and he's very stoic, but he gets a little misty-eyed, but pretty much stoic. And the whole bit is about how he's falling apart, you know, and he's like, can't believe I'm letting this happen on national television. And Conan says, you don't have to do this now. We can just go to commercial. And Swanson has this great line where he says, commerce can wait, you know, and he gets this big laugh. And then they finish the bit, they hug. And then Conan, I thought Conan did such a cool thing because I'm a big stickler about idea theft. Hate it. You know anything about me? You know that. If someone else's idea, you give credit where credit's due. Offerman walks off the stage, they close the bit, and Conan says, I've told you that over this past week what an amazing person Andy Richter is. And not only is he a great person, he's a great writer. And he gives a backstory, and he says, we were writing this for Nick, and we had hit this point where we just didn't know what to do with it. We needed a line, and Andy was literally walking by. I said, hey, Andy, come in for a minute. And we told him what the bit was and the premise, and we all thought it was funny. And I said, but, you know, Nick's going to be having this breakdown. I'm going to say we can go to commercial, and then we need Nick to have a line that, you know, we don't go to commercial. And he said, Andy Richter just went, commerce can wait. And it was perfect, and they wrote it in. And I just thought, that's great. It's great to see people get their due in that sort of environment. Okay, you know what? That's all the jibber jabber. Well, let's do one more story, and then I'm going to talk to you about Talladega, and we'll call it a night. I am lost as to why anyone would want to be an Olympic athlete. Except, I guess I'm kind of not. Actually, I'm not lost on this.
It isn't for the money.
You bunch of grifters of the generation who want to say, "I deserve recognition, but only on my terms." There's no give in my take. I'm just this person who deserves things, and I won't do what's expected of me in return for them. That's how I feel about U.S. Olympic track and field trials athlete Gwendolyn Berry, according to theepictimes.com. She received a bronze medal in the hammer throw. 31-year-old Black American and an activist.
What's the hammer throw?
Don't know. It's a great question. Should we look it up? 31-year-old Black American outspoken activist against systemic racism in the U.S. So here's a Black woman who is, I would suppose, sitting pretty due to Olympic success, right? And I don't think Olympic athletes are paid, right? They're allowed to do their endorsements, but they're not paid to be Olympic athletes, right? Isn't that the point?
Yeah, no. Well, you have the basketball team's all paid. And
are they?
The hockey team will be paid again. They're not using amateurs.
A little bit, huh?
Yeah, so the basketball team's all NBA stars. The women.
But don't they do it for free?
Yeah, they do it for free.
To be in the Olympics,
yeah,
is what I'm
saying.
If they
win a medal, they get taxed.
Oh, no kidding.
Yep.
How much?
I don't know. I used to know the ins and outs of it. But yeah, if you win a gold medal, you pay taxes on it.
That's crazy.
Or any medal. Any medal for that.
Leave it to the government. Leave it to the government. Hey, thanks for representing the country, doing your best, and bringing really a lot of distinguished attention to us. That'll be $6,000. Like, oh, okay. The hammer throw is one of four throwing events in regular track and field competitions, along with the discus throw, shot put, and javelin. Look at this. They've already changed. Look at this. They've already changed Wikipedia. The second sentence in it, activist Gwen Berry, who placed third in the hammer throw at 2021 Olympic trials, turned away from the American flag during the national anthem and placed her hands on her hips while making sophomoric faces. I'm here to represent those who died due to systemic racism, she said afterward. That's the important part. That's why I'm going. That's why I'm here today. No, it's not. It's to bring attention to yourself. And that's exactly what she did. That's way. Well, this is funny. Somebody like me rewrote this. Actually, this is on Wikipedia. This is great. You got to look up hammer throw on Wikipedia and see how long this stays. This is great. It continues the Wikipedia article. Actually, she was there because she was given the opportunity to prove her mettle and represent her nation, a nation she apparently hates. Conversely, if systemic racism were the problem Berry professes it to be, she would very much not be here today. The hammer used in this sport is not like any of the tools also called by that name. It consists of a metal ball attached by a steel wire to a grip. The size of the ball varies between men's and women's competition. That's sexist. Yep, has its roots dating back to the 15th century The contemporary version of the hammer throw is one of the oldest of Olympic Games competitions. Makes sense? So it's like a ball on a string, essentially, and how far can you throw it? I'm going to screen grab this, by the way, and we'll put this up on our Facebook page for you to see. So, so good. So good. You got to read it all when you go there. Okay, so there's the story. Gwen Berry gets up there. They play the national anthem, and she immediately turns her back, acts mad, and then later says, you know, you can't try to play me. She felt like they did it on purpose, and it was a setup because she was under the impression that the national anthem would play before she walked out to receive her medal, before she would walk out.
Instead of when you're on the podium, mm-hmm. like it's been for
ages and forever.
Since before when Caitlyn Jenner was a man.
She said she was, quote, pissed. And I was thinking about what should I do? Eventually, I just stayed there and just swayed. I put my shirt over my head. It was real disrespectful. I know they did that on purpose, but it'll be all right. I see what's up. So here's the thing. When you let people like this who really hate America go out and represent America with these false notions of what America is, you really bring a lot of negative attention to the other athletes who did well. Like, why is their moment taken from them so this woman can get up there and pitch a fit about things that don't even exist? I can't figure out how a systemically racist country gave the White House and the law enforcement agencies of the nation at large to Black Americans. If it's so systemically racist, and I mean this sincerely, if America is a systemically racist country, then Barack Obama and his minions bear a large brunt of that because they had 8 years literally to change everything. The man had both houses of Congress at a time. What was he doing?
Nothing.
I mean, he had the Department of Justice for a decade. What did he do? Nothing. Nothing. I'll tell you what he did. He went after white conservatives hard, hard with the IRS, Lois Lerner and all that. He went after gun shops hard with Operation Choke Point. He got federal officers killed, a minority federal officer killed, Brian Terry, dead, because Barack Obama and his minions decided that they would illegally arm Mexican drug cartels. Hundreds, if not thousands, of Mexican people dead because of Barack Obama and his policies.
Implemented a credit card tax on small business that nobody knew about.
Oh, really? No, I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, it cost, I'm not going to disclose the amount, but it was a clench your butthole type situation in our household for a couple of weeks, and we ended up getting it resolved, but it was a big deal.
So wait, I'm not familiar at all with this. What happened? Not that I can recall.
There was a new tax that had to be paid off the credit card machines, and we didn't. Our business, we didn't know. And came, and you know, this is when my dad had his businesses with his business partner. You know, they started when credit and debit cards were just, you know, or you didn't use them.
Right.
Still use cash, especially right. It was on bats out of town, and you know, predominantly people were scrapping up pennies, buying beer and cigarettes and everything else.
Yeah.
But we transitioned to this business. He got a tax bill put in front of him that, you know, we did taxes and everything else. He said, "Whoa, whoa, whoa! You didn't pay this, you know, six figure sum." It's like, nobody told us. Even our bookkeeper was like, "Hey, I didn't know this.
Oops."
And this was during the Obama administration. And it was tense times to be living in our house.
I bet.
Because, I mean, your profit went out. Well, our profit that we thought we'd accounted for went out the window.
I bet.
So it was rough, but it was something that we didn't know about. But once again, small, conservative business owners.
Oh, yeah. Think of you remember the GM fiasco when they did the GM bailout?
Yeah.
They definitely looked into the politics of the GM car lot owners. And there was too much of a coincidence for it to not be on purpose, where Republican owners were shut down and not given the bailout money, and the Democrat supporters were allowed to stay open. Infamously, Gretchen Carlson's family had two dealerships shut down, and she would talk about it. She was on Fox News at the time, and she would talk about it continuously, about how they came after her and her family. Yeah, Man, that's great. I didn't know that. I didn't know that was the thing. It's terrible.
But I've seen this story going around on Facebook about the hammer throw lady. I don't even remember her name. But there was another one. I can't remember her name either. There's so many Olympic athletes with the trials going on that
right.
you hear about now that, you know, that end up not making it. This sure. lady's obviously going to Tokyo to embarrass her country.
Right. They shouldn't let her go.
The one lady, and I will find her name and I will get it to you so you can put it on the internet. Nike dropped her because she got pregnant.
No kidding.
Dropped her because, and she is a African American woman. Dropped her because she got pregnant. Goes out in a, I think she was still wearing Nike stuff because that's what she had, with her C-section scar showing, goes out, wins the trials, going to Tokyo, and gives them a big F you. She'll get another endorsement deal now. Hopefully she won't go back to Nike.
Yeah.
But she did.
She's the runner?
She's the runner.
I
can't remember her name, but they dropped her because she was pregnant, which with women's sports, they wouldn't drop a WNBA player.
Right. You can't. I mean, how is that not a big deal?
I mean, and it's not like Nike's pouring money into these people either. What they do is they give you have a Nike rep, kind of like you would have a rep. You know, you're not going talking to Phil Knight, but you know, you're going to this guy and you say, hey, here's your login.
Uh-huh.
This is your login to the Nike website. Now, I'm sure they probably, with her being track, you know, there's a whole niche for track that I'm never going to tap into because sure. if I'm running track, something went terribly wrong.
Right.
But they give you your login, and your login is kind of like a gambling website. Here's X amount of credit.
Mm.
You have, you know, yeah, here's $2,000. Buy you some shoes, buy you some pants. And when the big stuff comes around, we'll give you the stuff. But here's your stuff. This is your stipend for the year. Do that. That's how all these pro athletes are on. Because you see pro athletes like the punter for the Panthers, or the kicker for the Panthers, Joey Sly. He's a Nike athlete. They're not paying him anything. They're giving him a stipend. So here's you $10,000 worth of credit. That's however gotcha. Much you're worth before we start actually giving you your own stuff. Gotcha. You can buy your family $10,000 worth of stuff, buy your own, and get the team issued stuff. You can do whatever you want to do. You got 10 grand, you get access to stuff before it comes out. Here you are.
Yeah, that's like, it's worse than the shooting sports, right? You go to shooting competitions.
That's about the same.
It's actually worse for them, believe it or not. You go around, everybody's a walking billboard. It's like NASCAR suits. But the difference is that people don't pay to be on your shirt. They give you like 10% off. Like, there's people not getting a ton of money. Cool. At least the Nike athletes get something.
When I was still working with you, Big Duck Hunter, even though this is the worst state to do it in, we had a group of guys from, you know, here to Charleston.
Mm-hmm.
We had this duck call company, and they're like, hey, you got some sponsored duck hunters. Yeah, it makes you feel cool.
Right.
I was like, all right, well, give us some duck calls. And they didn't have apparel, which is, I don't care about a duck call because I can't blow one.
Right.
I have people on staff for that. What's up, JT? But so yeah, we'll sponsor you. We'll give you, you know, a duck call that I'm gonna make 7 of, and they were crap. And I, you know, glitter ain't gold.
Right.
I was like, well, yeah. I don't see how you could say, hey, we're, and they did. They got some people. They're still together. I'm not with them anymore because I haven't been hunting since I started my new job. I don't have the time.
Right.
But
they put a pro staff together and send them out.
Yeah, they have a pro staff together, and they're doing good. But, I mean, it's just
– can you imagine being – like, just imagine that Duck Dynasty, I don't know who it was. I'm not saying that. But let's just say Beretta signs you on to a deal. We want to sponsor you. And then you go out, and you turn your back on Beretta.
They did.
Like, they play the Beretta.
I got this shirt.
That's right.
I got this shirt at Dillard's for $12.99 on sale because Beretta stuff's getting moved to the back.
Yeah, they gave you a discount because they love you. You know – I can't imagine that when Beretta signs you to some sort of endorsement deal and then you're on TV and they play the Beretta theme song and you turn your back on it and you go, Beretta's a racist company. Beretta should drop you and nobody would blame them because you hate the company. So why are we allowing people like this to go out and represent the country, regardless of her race, whatever her belief system is? If her belief system is America is a terrible country, then listen, move anywhere else you feel like living. And rep them. Like, what's the perfect country? Where you want to go?
Megan Rapinoe is going to be the one in the Olympics who's going to show her colors. Because if she stands for the anthem now, it's just a temper tantrum because she didn't like a president who got elected.
Oh, sure.
But she hates capitalism. She wants equal opportunity for everybody. Well, everybody should get a god-awful Subway commercial then.
Yeah.
That's the case.
Yeah. Isn't it funny how they're so wealthy, but they feel free to say that?
Right. And then you have, that's how she's made herself a household name. Not by standing and letting her performance be the catalyst, which, damn good soccer player. Damn good soccer player. But especially by American standards, because the men's soccer team sucks.
Right,
they're trash.
Yeah. Problem is, nobody wants to watch women's soccer. Right.
But in this country, we do, because nobody in this country wants to watch men's soccer anymore. Mm-hmm. They're so bad. The American women will go out there and put a shellacking on somebody.
You think it'll get better now that Major League Soccer is catching on around the country? Will we draw in talent?
Major League Soccer in Atlanta is drawing 70,000 people.
That's pretty good.
This team that's coming to Charlotte, I know a certain company that's doing their stadium renovations that are expanding for more. They're going to accommodate 21,000 people, and they're expecting to fill the place.
That's great.
Major League Soccer is catching on, but the thing about Major League Soccer is they hang on to old stars from across the pond. They get them at the end of their career, and they can make a fortune off of them. Instead of the
nurturing
best American soccer player in the world plays for Chelsea. He went across because that's where the money is. He goes across. You can't make money in America playing soccer.
No kidding.
Like you can't make money playing hockey, but you can make a ton of money playing soccer, but you have to go across the pond to make any kind of money. Unless you're one of these old timers that is a big name.
Right.
But that transitions into the women's team standing up for themselves. We should make as much as the men's team. No, they should make more than the men's team.
Yeah.
Because they put a product out there that's exciting to watch. I get genuinely excited to
watch.
But
it doesn't sell as well. It's more exciting,
yeah.
But the numbers suggest.
The numbers suggest that the men's team, because everybody held out hope the men's team's going to be so good.
Yeah.
And
And
they're getting there, but we can't even get through Mexico, Canada, Puerto Rico, that stage, much less when we start blending in England. I don't even know who's good at soccer. They probably speak Spanish. But Portugal. Portugal's a good one. Switzerland, England, every team in the Euro. If you took America and put them in the Euro, they wouldn't last 2 weeks.
Gotcha.
So,
all right. Well, there you have it.
About soccer.
It will be fun. Yeah, that's a great point you made, though. This Megan Rapinoe girl. It'll be interesting to see.
I want to see her response.
Yeah. She has to either stand up or stay seated. You know, was it about Trump or was it about America?
Right.
We'll find out. Because it's not like Biden's hopped in there and changed anything. Everything's the same. Okay. Let's wrap with you talking about Talladega. I'm really interested in this. So, first of all, what exactly was it that you did?
So, I got a call in December from one of my good friends, Chris. Him and his dad, they kind of goaded me on the phone. It was expensive, but it was a bucket list thing. And, that was one thing that me and my dad wanted to do together. And my dad passed, in the way that he did, unfortunately. So I said, screw it. I'm going to spend the money. I'm going to go do this by myself.
Yeah, man.
And Talladega, for those who don't know, is the largest track on the NASCAR circuit. It's 2.5 miles long, and it's a beast.
I did not know that.
It is in the middle of, by God, nowhere.
Right. Yep. That's for sure.
And it was an interesting experience and by far the coolest thing I've ever done.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So what exactly did you get to do?
So you go up to the track and you get to go in and, they have their volunteers working security. You sign your life away once just to say, hey, if I fall when I get out of the truck, it's not Talladega's fault. I tripped over that rock.
Mm-hmm.
You go down, you get to go through the tunnel, the same tunnel the media people go through. And when you come out, you're just in the structure. I mean, you can't see the backstretch from where you are. It's just, there's so much land there, you can't see that far. So you go and park and...
NASCAR guy, what's the backstretch? What do you mean? You can't see the other side of the track? You
can't see the other side of the track.
Oh, no
You can
kidding.
See it from the stands where you're elevated, but being on flat ground, it's just like walking in the middle of Pleasantburg Drive and looking one way as far as the eye can see.
Just road.
Because the backstretch is, I don't know the exact dimensions on it. I should have researched it, but the backstretch is every bit of a mile by itself. And you go, you sign in. They give you your fire suit. They won't let you wear your own. I found out. I had to wear somebody else's sweaty hand-me-downs.
Gross.
And then they corral you up. We had an early morning class, and they take you in. I was expecting a little bit of instruction. They cut on a video like you're at a go-kart track, and they say, all right, this is what we're doing.
No kidding.
And then they give you a motivational, you know, rah-rah boy speech and say, hey, you just got to trust the car. Trust the car. It's like, well, okay.
Right.
Let's go.
Yeah.
So we went and hopped in line, and my favorite NASCAR driver is Denny Hamlin, number 11, and I just so happened to go my way through the line. I was like, because some of the cars were older, some of the cars were newer. I was like, I really want to drive that number 11. Well, a buddy of mine, it was his uncle, and me were standing there. And they said, all right, who's the skinnier of the two? He jumped up and said, me. I was like, yeah, he's got a point. He jumped in. They threw him in one of the older cars. The guy gets done. Boom. There's the number 11. I was like, let's go. Dream come true.
Right.
Day made. I mean, I can see April solved. She knew it was fixing to happen. Beaming. She knew I was just over the moon. When you get in it and when you pay, we did the 48-minute package, which they turned it all the way as fast as they're going to let it go.
Which is what? Any idea?
5,800 RPMs.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at Talladega, not enough.
Right.
To be honest. Enough. Once you get the hang of it, but it starts at 52, then they take you up to 56, and then the last two, they let you go to 58.
So, but explain that to me in terms I would understand. As
so there's a rev limit. There's not a speedometer in the car. All there is a rev limiter. So you hit... They put a chip in there. When you hit 5,600 RPM, the car's just going wide open, but it hits a point to where, but if you don't let off of it, they can hear it and they will get on to you. Like, hey, let off of it, give it some weight, because you'll blow the motor up if you just hold it down.
Gotcha.
So went out for my little first run. And when you're standing on the flat of this thing, you got to think, there's 20-something degrees of banking. So imagine the Titanic being at about quarter tilt and people trying to hold on. That's what it's like. You have to crawl. You can't walk up the racetrack. You have to crawl up the racetrack.
That's what the turns are like.
That's what the turns are like. And you get up there and you get up speed, and they tell you have to be on fourth gear by the time you get through pit road, and that's nerve-wracking enough trying to get through the gears of this thing because they're so short.
Yeah.
Finally, I got it into fourth gear. I was like, all right, here we go. Got up on the track. And then they start you off at 5,000 for two laps to make sure you're comfortable.
Mm.
Got up, got it built up. And the first one, and the whole, now given premise to this, the whole way down there, April's like, you're going to drive like a P word.
Oh, really?
You're going to be nervous. You're going to clam up. You do it every time you get in one of these things. I was like, nah.
Not today.
She said, oh, yeah, you're going to drive it like a P word. I was like, all right, well, your ass is going to find out.
Yeah, thanks for the motivation, right?
And then my mom is all, oh, my God, it's in tears.
Yeah.
I was like, ah, it's going to be fine. Well, the first run goes well. I catch myself babying it through the corners. But there, you just hold it open. You've never felt grip and force.
Really?
The way you felt it. I mean.
That because with the speed.
The speed and the slope, it is just holding you down.
Yeah.
And the spotter, you have somebody in your ear telling you where to be the whole time. And. After the first run, I felt okay. After the second run, I was really like...
Feeling good, huh?
All right, let's open this thing up. And the third run, half of the third run, I went out and tore off pit road. I mean, ready to roll. I talked the guy into replacing my chip a session early. That way I could go a little faster. The spotter, the spotter cleared it. And... I get out there, first lap, I told the guy, the spotter, I was like, sorry in advance, because they wouldn't let you get all the way up against the wall. I turned two, I blended right up, held her about 2 feet from the wall. You could hear it echoing, it was cool. And the guy was like, don't do that again, but you did that fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I called a guy in our group coming, I just called him somehow.
So there's more than one car on the track then?
Huh? There's four cars on the track at a time, but spread out over 2.5 miles. They can kind of keep it to yourself. But you look at
so everybody gets about a half mile. Yeah.
I mean, I was running. I've driven them before. Called him, and their rule is don't pass him in the corner. Well,
okay.
I was beyond the rules at this point. I was like, I'm going to do this. I paid this much for this. I'm going to figure it out. And if we wreck it, we wreck it. And I told the spotter, I was like, I'm going to catch him in two. I'm going to go ahead and pass it.
Meaning what? What does two mean?
In turn two.
Okay.
He said, Yeah, go ahead. Stay in the middle. Keep your right tires on the third, on the outside line, and just drive on past him.
Okay.
He said, you can do that. Right. And he said that I've got his spotter. He's going to stay at the bottom. He's going to blend to the bottom of the racetrack. Meaning I have full course just to hammer off and go.
Yes.
Keep it out as high as I need to. Well, as soon as I pass him, I was running a different line, and the car went down on the nose. I was like, and started sliding around in the back. I said, no.
Right.
And I said, I hammered it to the rev limiter and kept trying to do that. I said, okay, something's wrong. And they're giving you a mile to communicate that something's wrong. And I was like, what's the matter? I said, the right rear tire is going down. I said, no shot. I said, no, I'm telling you, if I go into this corner wide open, we're gonna have a problem. He said, all right, pop it into neutral, match the clutch, come on in. Coast it around. As soon as I hit the apron, which is the flat part of the racetrack, I'll hear the tire came off.
No kidding.
It came off in the middle of the corner.
No way.
And I was like, so I hit the radio thing because they left me hooked up to communications. Mm-hmm. And, they said, what's the matter? I said, I'm telling you, the right rear tire went down. And you have your own little guy in the pit that's there with you. He was like, you're right.
Hmm.
So they unplugged it and they cut my video off. Cut the audio. I was like, okay.
What video? You got video running of you driving?
Oh, yeah. We'll get there in a second.
Okay, all right.
We'll get there in a second.
All right.
So they check under the hood, make sure everything is good. Check the tires, throw me four fresh ones on there. Take the chip out.
Hmm.
Letting me go.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I'm fixing to put on a clinic. I've already made my mind up.
Right.
I am fixing to get up in the same lane as these ride-along cars, and I am going to try to keep pace. I couldn't. I'm not that good. But I was going to teach everybody I was with a lesson, because I've heard 6 months of nothing but – since the week before Christmas, I'd heard nothing but trash talk. I was going to teach them something. Go out, fire off a lap, beautiful lap. Probably the best lap of the day. Coming off of turn two again, going to blend up to the wall. I'm driving a FedEx car. All you hear is bang, the hood flies up at about 165 miles an hour.
No kidding.
I can see FedEx, and that's about it. So I'm yelling on the radio, the damn hood flew up. The hood flew up. He said, where's the fluid at? Is it getting on your face? Because you have to wear an open face helmet there. I was like, no, use your binoculars. The hood is up. He said, oh, hell. Pull the inside. Clear. I was like, yeah, I got that already. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I know what I'm doing. And by the time the track worker got there, I got him to take two pictures of me. One in the car, one out of the car. And by the time those people got to us, I couldn't give him my number to send them to me.
Oh, no kidding.
So I'm out, and their director of operations comes. He's a Yank. And I was like, well, hey, man, how about snagging a picture? Absolutely not. Okay. Well, me not thinking, I didn't grab the SD card. Well.
So, wait, of a camera in the car?
Yeah, there's a camera facing the track, mm-hmm. which would have been out the window that saw the hood come up, and a picture facing me to see my reaction.
Okay.
I get back to pit road. My watch is going crazy because April thought that the life insurance policy was kicked in. Because they brought everybody back down pit road, and then all the group were with, we're missing one.
She's already buying things.
April's like, well, it's Dylan. And she's like, are you okay? And I'm sitting there thinking, my mom's worst fears have come true. Because tire goes down, hood flies up. That's a snake bit day. The guy's like, yeah, go up there, keep your suit on. We're going to get you in another one. I was like, yeah, I think I'm done today. I think twice is enough for me. I've got the thrill of it. I've been in this car for about an hour and 15 minutes now. I'm sweaty. I'm hurting. I'm done. I went to the guy. I was like, hey, the guy told me to come get my SD card. He's like, well, you're not getting that SD card back. I said, oh, but I am.
Right.
No, you're not. I was like.
What guy said this? The director guy?
The director of operations. I was like, who's going to stop me from going in there and taking that SD card?
Right.
I am, bub. I was like, you and one army guy.
Yeah.
You're gonna need your pals.
Like a GoPro or something.
It's just a little camera, but it's an SD card, old technology.
Easily accessible. You can just put your finger in and grab it.
I wasn't thinking to put my finger in, take it, and make them find. Hey, it popped out when the collision happened. Mm-hmm. Find it in the car, mm-hmm. and I'd have had it forever. But me and him ended up talking. He gave me half of my time back, which is about $1,700 worth of time.
Mm.
I took it and he gave me the video back in the back because I didn't get what I wanted, which he ended up making it right, mm-hmm. which was good of him. But, I mean, he had that video thing sitting, I mean, from me to you. I was like, I will leave $500 in cash sitting right here. You put that in your pocket, we'll call it a day. And this will never – I said, if it ever sees the light of day on YouTube, you can sue my butt. But I just want my friends to believe this.
Right. Story. Now, let me ask you. So did they give everybody else their video? Anybody else that paid for a video package gets their video? And you just don't get yours because there was an incident?
I got the first half of mine.
But you don't get it from the incident?
I don't get it from the incident.
Yeah. Because that to me – turns into a liability.
Oh, yeah. It's negative. Well, they have them online already of like tires going down and everything else. So they don't want any more negative publicity.
Right. Out. Yeah. I mean, and that's my point.
I just wanted it. I mean, I would have signed an NDA, a waiver, whatever they wanted to, just for me to have the video. But I knew that was for them. It's a business.
Well, yeah. But if the next class has a guy where the hood flies up, and he's not as experienced of a driver as you are, and he does collide with something and gets hurt. If a guy like you can come along and go, yeah, that happened to me, and when I asked for the footage so I could prove it was true, they absolutely refused to give me that footage, that shows they're hiding something. That could be a big problem for them.
Yep.
I'd just give me the footage and said, look, man, be nice to us. I goes,
yeah,
you're fine. Sorry.
So I told the guy, I recommend this to anybody.
Yeah.
That's all I want.
Yeah.
I want gift cards there for the rest of my holiday so I can save up and do that again.
So you're going to be able to go back on the refund they gave you? You have enough to go back?
I'm going to go back to Charlotte here when it cools off a little bit. Just sitting there, it's so hot.
Yeah, man. And Alabama, Talladega, is super duper hot.
It's super duper hot, and it's so long. So you got to think, it's about 56 seconds on lap. So you're sitting there waiting while somebody makes 8-10 laps. It's like, come on already. Let's speed this up.
Yeah.
But no, it was a bucket list item. Highly recommend it. I can't say enough about it. It was spectacular.
Yeah. Did it give you an appreciation for the guys that sent those cars for hours at a time?
I've always had an appreciation for them, but it gave me more of an appreciation for them to be nose to tail that loose and wiggling and, you know, 40 feet. Yeah,
it's kind of a terrifying prospect.
It's a terrifying idea.
NASCAR is one of those things that everybody laughs at until they see it in person.
Yeah. If you think it's easy, go try to do that.
Yeah. I was fortunate, like, I was 13 or 14 years old. We went to the Coca-Cola 600, I think it was at the time, up in Charlotte. Okay. And we watched that happen. And I had a hex on NASCAR. It's a good thing I didn't get heavy into NASCAR because I started picking drivers that I liked. And the first one was Davey Allison.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, like I was like, oh, I like this guy. I liked the way the Texaco car looked. He seemed like a nice guy. So I'd pay attention to what was happening to Davey Allison, and he died in his helicopter crash.
At Talladega.
At Talladega. Oh, I didn't know that.
Taking off.
Oh, I'd never put that together.
It gives you an idea of how massive that place is.
It is huge. It's huge, yeah. Like I said earlier, I've lived in Birmingham. I lived there for about 3 years. I would come home to Greenville to see family at Talladega.
Passing on 20.
It's hard to understand the perspective of how big it is.
Yep.
But yeah, there's Davey Allison, and then I can't remember. It's not even worth this so morbid. But then I got latched on to another guy I started liking, and he died on the track. And it was like, man, I need to stop even worrying about these drivers. So it was a Christmas gift?
Gift to myself.
Oh, okay.
I did it. You know, if I have a group of friends want to do something like that, I can afford it.
Yeah. Does your wife think you still drove like a wimp?
No. She actually did a ride along. She rode with one of the instructors.
Oh,
she
got out.
She enjoyed it. She was coming to drive it next time.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Which the hell, I wanted to. I'd pay for her to do it. Nothing like it.
Yeah.
You can get it in fourth gear, get it off pit road. You just go out there. It's just throws you back in that seat. There's nothing like it.
Is there math you can do if you know what you're doing where, like you mentioned, it goes to 56, right, on RPM? It goes to 56?
Mm-hmm.
Or math you do that you know how fast you're going, or somebody clocking
you? You can take your second. You can take your have somebody clock your seconds around the track. They give you your high speed thing, but the way they do it, it's kind of skewed.
Oh yeah.
But you can have somebody take your time, and then you can do the math to break it down to like, okay, this was about your top speed. Which about the top speed out there was about 168, which is fast enough.
When does that come? Does that come out of the turn usually?
Yeah, when you're going down
out of the turn, is that straight away?
When you're going into the turns.
Into the turns is when you're going fastest?
Is when you're going fastest. You build momentum coming out of the turns, and then you run that all the way down. And then when you go in the turns, it builds up inertia And depending on your line, it's smaller tracks. That'll make you go faster.
That sounds like
But there it's just hold it open and however fast you are, fast you are.
Huh. So 2.5 mile track.
Yes. So, I mean, you're literally out of, when you go to do that, you're out of people's sight for about 45 seconds.
Is it a quarter mile turn on each side and then a mile straightaway? How's the breakdown?
I don't know the breakdown. I wish I would have done a little bit more digging into that, but it is.
Scared.
It's about right. Okay. Yeah, it's insane.
Your wife, one last thing, when she, not when she found out, earlier today, sent me a picture of you dressed as what appears to be maybe a race car driver. Actually, you look more like a stereotypical flag-waving babe from like a 1960s James Dean movie.
Let me see that. That was in high school. That's Ricky. That's Ricky Bobby and his smoking hot wife.
Okay. All right. Okay. Now I get it.
That was for charity.
Right.
We didn't raise much money.
Oh, this is you 12 years ago.
Yeah, that was my senior year of high school.
Can I put this on the internet?
Absolutely. It's already there.
Oh, okay. All right. It's your senior year. You don't look like you in this picture. I mean, you don't have a beard, I guess.
Yeah, I was skinny then.
No.
Thanks for bringing up old stuff.
I mean, how tall is your wife?
Short.
Yeah, my wife's like 5'3", 5'4".
I think April's in the same neighborhood.
Yeah. You look real tall in this picture.
Yeah, I'm wearing stilettos. I'm wearing.
Are you really?
Yeah, I'm wearing stripper heels.
All right. See, I can't see your shoes.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. And let me describe the picture. I guess that would help. What I'm looking at here is a stump with big blonde hair pulled back into a, not even pulled back. I'm not even sure what this hairstyle is called.
It's called a Halloween Express wig.
It's definitely a big blonde wig. Eyeshadow galore, some lipstick for sure.
Yep.
You have a kind of a V-neck, but it runs to the just below the middle of your chest. And I'm going to call that a quarter zip.
It's meant to show curves on women. It's supposed to not go down
right.
That far.
It's going to show cleavage if you're a chick.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, or me now.
Or you now.
Yeah.
It looks like, is that the Playboy bunny?
Yeah, it was a Playboy costume. We bought it that day.
Okay. I gotcha. So this is like a Playmate outfit you're wearing.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And you have your arm around your future wife at the time,
yep.
Right? Did y'all date all through high school?
Senior year.
Just senior year.
That's
so this was it?
Down. Yeah.
This is when she knew you were the one.
Well, she showed up in my computer class with a broken wrist and, dare I say, two very valuable assets that I very much appreciated at the time. And I was
okay.
Like, hey, how are you? And then it kind of just rolled downhill from there, and she hasn't left since.
Good for her, or you, really.
Yeah.
For her. Condolences to her on the wedding. And so she's dressed as – she's Ricky Bobby there.
Yeah.
Okay. I get it. She's wearing a Wonder Bread jacket. It says Dennett Racing on it.
Yeah.
I got it. Okay. Ricky Bobby and his smoking hot wife.
That's awesome.
It's a beautiful picture.
Yeah.
Should be proud of it.
Yeah. The real star from that Alabama trip, though, was Bucky's.
Oh, yes. Bucky's is a barbecue restaurant.
No.
No?
Bucky's is a gas station.
Oh, okay.
There's one of these puppies coming to Anderson in 2024.
Okay.
I can't say good enough things. It's like white trash heaven.
Okay.
And I was at home.
All right. Well, wait. Let's break it down in a way I can understand.
Too hot.
I know QT and I know Sphinx. And then I know trash that populates the rest of the gas station world.
So imagine if a QT and a Sphinx had a baby.
They joined forces.
Yeah.
The best.
And that baby wasn't as good enough to be a Bucky's. Because that's the only way you can describe it.
Okay. Walk me through the Bucky's experience.
Just for the start, there's no trucks, no 18-wheelers. It's RVs, it's civilian traffic only. No professional drivers are allowed, which I enjoy, because getting out of there with 18-wheelers sometimes is a headache. But these things are so big, they have to fix the infrastructure of the exits that they go on. We were at pump two.
Wait, walk me through this real quick. So they, how do you police that? Like, you just keep the overhead low, like that, the overhang?
There's nowhere big enough for them to turn around. There's no overhead in a diesel pump for them to fit.
Gotcha. Okay.
A recreational RV is about as big as it's going to get in there.
Okay. All right.
And for reference, we were at pump 215.
Okay.
There's pumps. I mean, I think that those were aggressively numbered. I think there were, at this location, there was 110 gas pumps, which is...
No kidding.
So imagine six bays of QT gas pumps. And we went in the side entrance, which was the best way to go through.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like half Cracker Barrel, like with name brand cast iron skillets and trinkets and, you know, redneckery clothing. The other half, Costas, Oakleys,
mm-hmm.
Dagum, they had Marsh sheets. They had gun cases, hard and soft. They had a bore sighting kit. This is a gas station.
Yeah, but who is that guy? Like, man, glad I got this gun. You know what I got to do? I got to swing my buckies and get a case for it.
Right. That was my thoughts, exactly.
Because it kind of seems like you would be in the middle of a trip when you hit a bucky.
They had a marsh seat for duck hunting in there. Yeah. This is on the same exit as it's in Leeds, Alabama,
mm-hmm.
with the outlet, and there's a Bass Pro Shop on top of the hill. And normally, yep. I'm a sucker for a Bass Pro Shop, but didn't need it. If they sold guns in there, I would have never left. But, I mean,
that's a nice Bass Pro, by the way.
Yeah. So,
it's huge.
So you go in, and they have, like, I mean, PFGs, they have everything in there. Then they have their own section where they're slinging their own merch, and they're selling a wild vibe and that stuff. Because 90% of their business is tourists.
Mm.
You've never seen anything like this. It blew my mind. Then you get to the middle. The middle is because I consider Sheetz to be the superior gas station of the Southeast.
Really?
Yeah. Sheetz or nothing. We don't have them here. If you get a Hickory up above Concord, you start getting into Sheetz land, that's where it's at.
What makes it better?
Because it was like the original.
Okay.
They have good food. And it's all
fresh. Do they?
It's all fresh made.
Real food?
Real
fresh food. Because that's the problem with QT. QT advertises like they have good food.
But
it's not real food. Everything's in, like, I know it's going to sound crazy. I once went to QT for breakfast, and I tried to order their egg bowl. It's like egg and cheese.
And that was your
mistake. I love egg and cheese biscuits. You know, just go to Bojangles and get me an egg and cheese biscuit with best friends. That's like my jam. I just love egg and cheese. Simple, right? And yeah, it was imitation egg, and I about got mad about it. So it's not real food.
Yeah.
It's not fun to eat imitation food. Sheetz is real food.
To me, it is. It's probably still imitation food, but Bucky's.
Mm-hmm.
Now, given I'm with my buddy Chris, and I want to give a shout-out to my buddy Aaron, Rustic Refined Woodworks. Cheap plug here. How you doing, bud? But you go into the center part, and they've got 20 screens all in a split of tacos, sandwiches, I mean, fresh, handmade stuff. This is the center. Then you go past that. They have people in 50s get-ups pulling taffy, pralines, pecans, salted nuts, like a beat shop.
Mm-hmm.
People in the back of it, you got the largest man in the building wearing a cowboy hat. And every time they throw a brisket down, they start singing, brisket on the board, brisket on the board, which was like, oh, my God.
Okay.
Fresh brisket. And they've got people back there like Oompa Loompas. As fast as they can get this thing cut up, they're putting it in sandwiches and tacos. And they're not taking it to the back and bringing it back out where it's like, oh, we're going to put it in the microwave. No.
Yeah, no,
these
no, no.
These people are rolling this stuff as fast as humanly possible.
Yeah, buddy.
They're putting on a show and putting them in these sliders. And people are there just like fish at the beach, just picking them up. It's like, daggum. I was like, okay, well, I'm going to explore the rest of this place because now I'm curious. I mean, they're doing this with pork and brisket at the same time. They've got three cutting boards and all this meat out.
Now, I'll interject real quick and say that I worked at a barbecue place that was fresh off the board, right? Like, we literally would pull the pork butt right out of the smoker, drop it on the board, and then you chop that till you sold it all.
Yep.
You had to clean the fat and off
the
bone.
And that's the way they are here.
It's the best barbecue I'd ever had. It's still to this day, I could crave it. It doesn't exist anymore. It was the best barbecue I'd ever had.
I wanted a brisket taco, and I couldn't get one.
Mm. Because people were grabbing them up so fast?
So then you go over. They had a full bakery, cakes, the works, and then they have a full meat shop. And then the gas station portion, when you finally reach the chips, beer, water coolers, everything like that.
Typical.
The most stocked thing you've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Man, ever seen. I mean, you go in this place.
Mm-hmm.
They have your seltzers, your IPAs, which from Atlanta down to
there's
there.
Nothing.
There's nothing. So yeah. They have all your Atlanta stuff, all your Birmingham stuff. They meet you in the middle. They, I mean, chips. Whatever you can imagine. I spent $350 in this place.
On what?
Crap.
Tell me what you walked with.
Brooks got a football.
Okay.
Charlotte got a Bucky the Beaver costume.
Oh, yeah.
Me and Brooks got matching 4th of July shirts.
Perfect.
I got a new cord for my Costas. It was just all kinds of stuff. But I mean, I've never been anywhere like that. I've been Shanghai to Knoxville. That's my MO. Yeah. Like, I know people everywhere.
Yeah.
But I just, when I walked in here, it was like something took over. It was like, this is the perfect level. It's one of those things like what's going on the internet right now. What's classy if you're rich, but trashy if you're poor, it's this place. It's this place.
Caviar.
And I'm not rich by any means. But, you know, I identify as upper middle class white trash. That's
sure.
how I like to
sure.
identify. And that's not even true anymore. But it was just mesmerizing. You could buy all this stuff. If they sold guns, I swear to God, I would have bought a rifle.
Just to say
I bought a gun at a gas station.
Yeah. Yep, I've been there.
And they could sell them.
Mm-hmm.
They could sell them.
I'm sure they could.
But no, that was the highlight of my trip.
That'd be hard. You probably have to go long guns only. So much transient.
Yeah.
Traffic, you know.
I'm not ashamed to admit that I drove 45 minutes out of my way to go to this gas station.
No kidding.
Just because I heard all the hype. There's one coming to Anderson.
I'll go.
Exit 21. They're pouring.
That's good to hear. Exit 21.
I think I read they were pouring $2 or $3 million into the infrastructure just so that exit could accommodate their traffic.
Yeah, and you know what'll happen? You go check your receipt when you go there, and you'll pay a fee.
You'll pay to
Anderson.
Well, now they're talking about the Bass Pro Shop land on 101.
Mm-hmm.
They said they bought that.
Bucky's did. Interesting. If you don't know the backstory there, that was something Spartanburg County ruined. Well, Spartanburg and Greenville County. Couldn't get along. We were going to get a Bass Pro Shop. There are big plans. And then,
yep. And then
something about the piping and drainage. And
Our good friends, the German auto manufacturers,
BMW.
They weren't very kind about that either.
I'm sure they weren't. Yeah. So the counties mutually, though, didn't play nice enough.
And then when Bass Pro buys Cabela's, you have a Bass Pro. Mm-hmm. We don't need any more.
But yeah,
the word on the street is that Bucky's has bought that land.
That would be cool.
Which it's good for. I mean, that'll be good for Spartanburg's economy. I mean, that thing.
Always.
This thing is a money making machine.
I was in a meeting once as an intern with people from the city of Anderson. I believe they were city of Anderson. Is Anderson a county too? That doesn't matter. Yeah, Anderson would be a county. It was a county organization. So yeah, they worked with 10 counties around. The upstate of South Carolina, and the people from Anderson were there, and they talked about the fact that they made a ton of money off exit 19 because they imposed a tourist tax. So if you stop at exit 19 off 85, you're in Anderson County, and that immediate vicinity is charged a surcharge because they think too many tourists come there. So they charge
you
extra.
Because when you go down 85, I mean, there's nothing until you get to 19. And then after 19, there's nothing until you get to 40. And vice versa.
It made me so mad to hear it. I've never stopped at 19 again. Like, I'll purposefully stop early, you know, like way back near Easley.
When I was a kid, we played baseball at the complex there. And that's what, I mean, that's all it is. They packed in restaurants and stuff like that.
Yeah. Denver Downs is on that exit.
Yep.
It's harder to go when you know. I mean, I hate the idea that you're paying more just because it's all there is. Like, look, I took the time to come to your rinky-dink crap area. The least you could do is just be glad I'm here, but they're not. They're going to punish you.
No.
Okay, I lost my train of thought then. I was gonna ask one more question about Bucky's and kind of tell you a funny story you reminded me of. So the overall Bucky's feel is, it sounds almost like a mini Walmart where you can get your gas, but better food.
It's an attraction.
Is there a restaurant there? Can you sit and eat the food you buy?
I didn't see anyone.
Okay.
But, I mean, you could. There's enough room for you to linger. But, I mean, there was... It was overwhelming. If you've ever had that, when you've ever been in a store or a place you've never been, and there were so many people and so much going on and so much to see, you could have spent an hour and a half, 2 hours in there just trying to get the lay of the land, but there were so many people. The place is so big, they have buggies.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, they have buggies so you can carry your stuff around.
You're in the business that you could probably give me kind of accurate estimate here. What are we talking square footage-wise? 10,000 feet? 20,000 feet?
60.
What?
Every bit of it.
Really? Inside?
Including the back of the house and bathrooms and everything. I got you. Every bit of 60.
60,000 square feet of
gas. It is a massive structure.
And a typical QT is like what? 5? Maybe?
Yeah.
Not even.
5 to 75.
Yeah. I think the whole thing?
Roughly.
Yeah.
If I had to guess, well, I haven't seen a QT in a while.
I'm going to say like 2,000.
I mean, this place is the size of. It's hard to even describe it. I mean, it's the size of a Walmart food market. A small mart, as I call them.
Here's what we're going to do. I make you this guarantee. If Bucky's comes to Anderson, we will get the video cameras out, and we will do a felt refill visit, and you're going to be my Bucky's guide, the official tour guide, and let's go take a tour of Bucky's.
Deal.
Done?
Deal. Done deal.
What would you say is the most unique item you saw in there? What's the one thing? A gun case sounds pretty out of place.
Everything's out of place.
A taffy station's pretty cool, actually. Because, you know, a lot of people don't understand. The gas stations don't make money off gas. They're like a penny or two per gallon that those guys pull in. So you got to get people inside. So it's smart to have a taffy.
You make your money. These local guys, they make their money on beer and cigarettes.
Yeah.
That's where you make your money, if you own a gas station.
Sure.
Unless you own a QT or something like that. But mom and pops make their money on beer and cigarettes.
Yeah. QT's, you know, upcharging the coffee and the food. And QT has good coffee.
I mean, there's nothing to describe it. I mean, there's nothing to compare this against. It is a unique, one of a kind. If you get off an exit, then you say, hey, we got to get gas. But, you know, you're on the trip, you're traveling, you try to hit a Loves or something like that.
Right.
That
yeah,
has
of
McDonald's,
course.
Burger King, Arby's attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
These people have taken that, made it their own brand, monopolized it, and it's all in one. It's an all inclusive experience.
Spell Bucky's for me.
BUC-EES.
Okay.
Their website is the most vague thing ever.
Oh, really?
They're up in one. I'll tell you like this. They're up in one at the beach when you're going to Myrtle Beach.
Uh-huh.
The Florence exit that you take for the shortcut to the beach and go through Marion and all that stuff.
Sure.
They're opening one on that exit, and it will close every gas station on that exit, except for the Pilot truck stop on that exit. It will close every mom-and-pop gas station on that exit.
Really?
Yes.
It's huge in Texas, it looks like. I see
Texas and the police. Excuse me.
I see what the highest number is. Go ahead.
They're bleeding up towards Alabama. They're bleeding this way.
Yeah, I see. It appears they have roughly 51 locations.
Yep.
Leeds, Alabama being the one you went to. Robertsdale, Alabama. Daytona Beach, Florida. St. Augustine, Florida. Fort Valley, Georgia. On and on it goes. But then those are the only ones. The ones I just read are the only ones not in Texas.
Yes.
After that,
we saw one on the way to Florida in December.
Uh-huh.
And I like Ric Flair smacked April across the chest. I was like, look at that.
Yeah.
And it's crazy to see it being built. It is insane.
Huh. Fort Valley, Georgia. How close is that? Go to Google Maps and see. Get some directions here. From here, my house. Oh, man, 4 hours away. Yeah. South of Atlanta, off Russell Parkway. So it's near Warner Robins, where I used to live.
Worth a trip.
Warner Robins isn't.
We can squeeze some content out of that, buddy.
Bucky's might be. That's crazy. All right. But you didn't answer my question. Most unique item you saw inside.
The most unique item I saw inside?
Yeah, so like let's say your family isn't with you. You still have your $300. What did you see in there? You're like, man, I'd have bought that instead of all that other stuff.
there's nothing that really jumped out to me. It was just an assortment of, I just bought an assortment of crap.
Right.
But I mean, they had some pretty nice cast iron skillets. They had utensil sets. I mean, they had.
There's nothing you walked out of there thinking, I kind of wish I'd have grabbed that too.
No, I'm just not into all that stuff. I mean, it was like, imagine half of it being like a Cracker Barrel, like the stuff you don't need, but you're probably going to, you'll give it a sniff on the way out the door.
Yeah.
I mean, probably a pair of Costas. Just say I bought some at a gas station.
Sure.
The Marsh seat. I would have bought one of those Marsh seats. It was comfortable.
Yeah,
I made my buddy hold it while I sat in it. It was a one of a kind.
Why did he have to hold it?
Well, it doesn't go on the ground. It's made to go in the mud. It's a spike on the bottom.
Oh no, I didn't know that.
So you put it in the, when it hits the mud, it deploys and it sticks the spikes out. That way you can sit in marsh while you duck.
Okay.
Or some people deer hunt with marsh seats on the ground. It's
That's funny.
The hard rifle case.
Yeah, maybe the hard rifle case. Yeah,
the hard rifle case would have been a good one too.
I don't know. Marsh seat's pretty good though. That takes the case.
Well, by the time I bought the marsh seat and the hard rifle case, I'd spent about $300.
You're reminding me. I recently took my boys to do whatever the activity was. I don't know. My oldest son is very concerned about our money. Like he asks a lot about how much money do we have? Are we okay? I think it's due to his mom constantly peppering him about how poor she was as a child.
Well, I need to put him in touch with my daughter. Oh, my gosh.
With your daughter?
With my daughter, because she has no worries in the world.
Yeah, and that's like our middle child. So I don't remember what me and the boys did, but whatever it was, my oldest is like, Dad, that was way too much money for that, whatever it was we did. I said, well, why do you say that? Oh, it was this much money. Well, I don't even remember how much it was. There's this much money, and this is what we did, and that just doesn't make sense to me. Like, that's a lot of money.
Sounds like April when I told her how much I paid to drive from that driving experience.
Yeah, really?
She was like, yeah, you know, you paid X amount. I was like, she said, did everybody pay you back? I was like, no, that was just for me. She said, excuse me? I was like, and we're in remote Alabama. I was like, well, this is the end of the line for old Stubber.
Yeah, that's the end for me. I explained to my oldest son in front of my younger son that you don't die and keep your money, right? And, you know, you can give it to other people. You can do whatever. You can leave it to worthy causes. That's great. But money's not the most important thing in the world, right? And so I made some sort of quip, I guess you could say, off the cuff. I just said, buddy, spending time together and having fun is definitely more important than the money.
Absolutely.
Okay? So don't worry about the money. So a couple of weeks go by, and we're up in their room playing whatever we're playing. And again, my oldest son makes a comment about money. And my middle son goes, hey, having fun is more important than money. And I was like, all right, well, wait a second. Maybe we need to temper this a little bit, Bob. Like, you still need your money in the bank. Like, yes, it's good to have fun. You still should save some of it. And that actually came down to the fact that my middle child does spend. If he finds a quarter on the ground, boy, where's their candy machine? And we can go pop this quarter in right now, and I can get a gumball, whatever the case may be.
He sounds like me.
Yeah. So that was funny.
Well, since my old man's passed, that's been like, I'm trying to get some stuff done that he would have wanted done. And then now old crotchety me is coming like,
right.
What are we doing?
You spend money.
But yeah, no, I spend money with the best of them. If my wife wasn't a little bit financially sound, I'd probably be on my second bankruptcy by now. I like cool stuff.
Yeah. I like to say you can't take it with you, and that includes your credit card debt.
Yeah.
I mean, legit.
Trust me.
Legit.
Yeah. I'm a big fan. I probably paid $200 for a cheeseburger. I'm just like, you know what? We'll pay that off later.
I'm telling you, I'm going to keep really, really good credit, and then I'm going to retire, and I'm going to make minimum payments until God takes me home.
I'm telling you.
And then it's just bye.
I'm figuring it out now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's have a good time.
Yeah.
Don't chill yourself having a good time, but have a good time. You only live once. And that's old. That's a saying that's gotten worn out, but have a good time. Take that. enjoy it.
You and I used to have a coworker who every time you'd say, "How you doing, man?" He'd say, "I'm just trying to have a good time before I go." And I always thought, "Yeah, man, that's right." And he would say that every time I saw him. Every time I saw him.
Anyway. Well, I wish I remember who that was.
Todd. Was his first name.
My main man, Todd.
Yeah, boy.
I hope he listens to this.
Yep.
I have a guy. I've still got a painting that guy sold me in my or a piece of art, Charleston Canal in my living room.
Funny enough, nobody knows this. I mean, I can say it. It's my show. I'll do what I want. But in fact, Todd's son, Tristan, went to the Marine Corps.
Did he really?
Almost a year ago now. Yeah, and this will be cool. He came here and we did an interview just before he left for boot camp on the premise that we were going to wait 1 year and then do the second part of the interview. And so I have an hour talking with Tristan, maybe 40 minutes or so, pre-boot camp or basic, whatever the Marines call it. And then he took off for that and COVID happened and the world shut down. So it's about time that we sit back down with him and finish that interview. So you'll have your first 30, 40 minutes and it's going to pick right back up a year later and we're going
to
talk
about it. Which is wild because when I left the place where we used to work, there was the girls made me the cake, the "we hope you fail" cake.
Yeah.
So I'd come back.
Epic.
Yeah. I've always remembered that. But that was, Todd was the only person that was like, "You're going to succeed. You're going to make it." Yeah. Besides someone else out here. And that has stuck with me forever.
One of the most optimistic guys you can meet.
Oh, yeah. I'd a go getter.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I wish him the weather. If you're listening to this, buddy, I hope you're doing well.
Yep. All right. Stump, as always, buddy. Much appreciated.
Thank you for having me. Sorry, too long as a quitter, but
I mean,
Stump is here.
Is he a quitter or is he just plain lazy? It's a debate for another day. We'll come back and have it later.
I remember when I had two kids.
Yeah, me too. And then I had a third. Yet here I am.
If that happens, if that happens, I'm getting some hair off the mailman.
All right, man. We did this week's vote at the top of the show. Make-A-Wish Foundation is being really dumb. They should just apologize and get over it. And if a terminally ill kid wants to take a trip, they should do what it takes to help that kid take a trip. That's what I say. Buddy, appreciate it as always. Find out more information about the show at FeltRecoilShow.com. There you can stalk us on all the social medias. You can see the picture of Ricky Bobby and his super sexy hot wife, a la Stump, there on our Facebook page and Instagram right now. We'll see you in 7 more days. Next week, I promise next week, we'll slow down and we'll solve all the world's problems. But until then, have a great time. We'll see you.
See you.